Welcome to the SureCast, a podcast produced by Bernstein Sure, covering a variety of law, public affairs, and community-related issues of interest. The opinions expressed are not necessarily those of the firm, and no advice in this podcast should be considered legal advice. If you are in need of legal counseling, please call Bernstein Sure at 207-774-1200. Thank you, and on with the show.
And joining us today here in the SureCast studio is David Farmer. He is Managing Director of the Bernstein Sure Group, a public affairs, strategic communications, and political consulting firm with offices in Maine, New Hampshire, and Vermont, obviously part of Bernstein Sure. And I want to welcome you to the SureCast, David.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
You have such an intriguing job here at Bernstein Sure. Tell me a little bit about, let's kind of launch into when you joined Bernstein Sure and what drew you to be part of the law firm.
Well, sure. First, I'm not an attorney, and the services I provide are different than what you might expect for a law firm to provide. Essentially, I work in public affairs and public communications. I help Bernstein Sure clients and my clients solve problems in sometimes non-traditional ways. You know, I've been lucky. I joined the firm in 2013, right after we had our success with winning the same-sex marriage campaign in Maine, which Bernstein Sure, through pioneering folks like Pat Peard and Kate Knox, were leaders of that movement for years. And then after that campaign, I was able to come inside the firm and bring my practice here and join those folks.
You've had a very rich background. You know, you're a journalist. You have really done a lot of work in that industry, and so we share that in common. But I love what your job now requires, which it just seems like it requires a lot of collaborative efforts, and that you're out there and you're connecting people and ideas and really getting at the root of, you know, issues, or if there's a problem, or if there's a crisis. I mean, you are the person people pick up the phone and they say, you know, the first call's got to go to David Farmer.
Well, I was a reporter and editor in newspapers in Maryland, Virginia, Washington, D.C., and Maine for about 17 years before joining Governor John Baldacci's staff, where I served for 4 years as his communications director and deputy chief of staff. And in both of those positions, both of those career moves, you get experience dealing with crisis, dealing with problems. And one of the things that I do as part of my job is to help take very complicated ideas, very complicated circumstances, and boil them down so that they're more understandable, and to break big problems down into their component parts and try to find solutions.
And is that something that, is that something you kind of learned, or is that something you've picked up along the way?
Well, I mean, I think that, what is the Monty Python line? Nobody expects the Spanish Inquisition, right? I don't think that there's any particular training for dealing with a crisis. I think that it is having some basic understanding of both the media and the law, and then I think it's practice. And when you work as a reporter, you cover crisis on a daily basis, whether it's a natural disaster, a fire, a political scandal or intrigue. You see the world through the lens of a reporter. And then after my time as a reporter ended, I went in to work with the government, where we dealt with difficult circumstances, policy positions, but also things like the Patriots Day storm or flooding in Aroostook County. Large data breaches, inappropriate activity by folks who work for the state government, personnel problems. So really things that go beyond just what you think of as politics into the responding to the things that touch people in a very real and very personal way.
Isn't it interesting that you had the opportunity to go from reporting on things to being in a situation in which you can actually help the thing, and you are really the person who can get to the source of what's going to help people out?
Yeah, I think that a lot of folks think of reporters and the people that they cover as opponents. And certainly there is tension between those two groups. But
they need each other, though, don't they?
But the truth of the matter is that if you're a reporter covering the state government, you need access to information and for people to talk with you. And if you're the state government, you have an obligation to provide that access and that information. And even though, you know, I've certainly been displeased with the way particular stories have come out at times, you know, I don't find the reporters, I don't see them or view them as enemies. I see them as colleagues. And sometimes with your colleagues, you have a good day. And sometimes with your colleagues, you have a bad day. But the next day, you have to go right back and work with them. So I've always tried to manage, you know, those conflicts in that way.
Well, I think that's a really good way of looking at it. And you have to, there has to be a modicum of respect, because there is that, you do need one another. They need you to report on them accurately, and you need them. And so there is that kind of dance, isn't there?
Well, and I think also one of the advantages to having worked in as a journalist for so long is that I have an understanding of the flow of a reporter's day, the types of information that they're interested in, the deadlines that they and pressures that they operate under. And I take those seriously. And so, you know, I see my job often is trying to facilitate the job that they're doing. Again, that doesn't always mean it's smooth sailing. But I do think that that experience on the other side of the equation helps me to do a better job as a liaison with the press.
Some of your biggest work comes from outside of the state lines of Maine, and you have worked on some really big campaigns. I'd love for you to share some of those and maybe give us some examples of some you're most proud of and maybe some that were the most difficult but had a great outcome.
Sure. I mean, one of the things that I think that I've been really lucky with is that Bernstein Shore, as a firm, has allowed me to pursue work and advocacy on issues that matter to me personally. I mean, I think that there are a few instances in Maine that really stick out that I'm proud of. The first would be the campaign in 2012 to allow all loving, committed couples to marry mm-hmm. in Maine. Maine became the first state to legalize same-sex marriage at the ballot box. Then, you know, a six-year effort that I undertook to help create Katahdin Woods and Waters National Monument, which is a great national park unit in the Katahdin region of Maine that is already having an impact by bringing people to the region and helping businesses rebound. And, you know, we were able to get that through with a presidential declaration by President Obama. Mm-hmm. And then more recently in Maine, I think the campaign to expand Medicaid. You know, it matters that because of that campaign today, more than 40,000 people have access to health care that they didn't have before. Now, when I think about the work I've done outside of Maine, most of that work is with the American Civil Liberties Union. Mm-hmm. And I work in the area of LGBTQ rights. So I was involved with a ballot initiative in Massachusetts, for example, where folks were trying to take away civil rights protections for transgender people. Mm-hmm. It's the shorthand is they call it a bathroom bill. Right. And we ran a comprehensive statewide campaign down there, and I'm glad to say that more than 60% of voters in Massachusetts rejected that law. Mm-hmm. We had a similar campaign in Anchorage, Alaska. It's a local referendum where, again, some folks were trying to take away basic protections for transgender people. And, you know, that was a municipal election on the other side of the country, just about as far away as you can get. But really proud of the outcome there, where once again, voters stood up and said that we want to make sure that transgender people are treated just like everybody else in our community.
So when you cover those and you help those campaigns, do you do a lot of traveling? I mean, did you find yourself in Alaska for that, or are you able to operate right here out of Portland, Maine?
Yes and yes. You know, I do travel when necessary, but the world is pretty small and pretty close. I was doing a media training for that campaign, and we did it via a video conference. And the training started at 11 p.m. our time, to start. To start in Alaska when the volunteers were there. And I would say that I do a lot of media training. I do it for nonprofit executives, business folks, anybody who thinks that they may need some practice before they do an interview or get involved with the media. But that's the first time I've had ever started a training at 11 p.m. And while they all did great, I'm not sure I did a very good job. It was a little bit off my game that night.
Well, 11 o'clock, I mean, you know, come on. That's dedication, though. I mean, that goes above and beyond.
Well, I mean, you know, when you work in a campaign or advocacy environment, you can't, the hours are somewhat meaningless. The time of day is somewhat meaningless. You are involved in a 24-hour media cycle. And particularly when you're working with volunteers who have decided to take a step and step forward and to make themselves part of the public conversation, you know, they have normal lives. And so you have to accommodate them in their volunteer efforts if you're going to help them to be better and to feel more comfortable.
Wow. Do you like what you do?
I do. I am very lucky. And I know that I get up every day and know that I'm very lucky. I get to work on issues and with people that I care deeply about. And I would have never imagined that I would have had the opportunity to do the things that I do and make a living at it.
And to combine your various backgrounds.
Well, it is a good fit. You know, it's all come together for me. You know, I knew that I wanted to be a reporter, a journalist for a long time. And I felt called to that profession, as a lot of people do. But after I'd been in it for a while, and I had two young kids, and the industry was contracting, you know, it was changing. And it didn't seem like a place that I could stay and take care of my family. And I moved over to politics. And I actually think, you know, in hindsight, I'm probably better at what I do now than I was as a reporter. Although I loved every day that I was a reporter.
It takes a really kind of some little mix of wisdom and I guess a vision, you know, having kind of a visionary quality to you to be able to see down the pike. I mean, you know, the news business has changed over time, and you got out, it seems, right at the right time. I mean, you seem to have hit it at the right time.
Well, I got lucky with an opportunity, I think. And, you know, the transition that I was going through, and I got out right before reporters started to carry the demands of being multi-channel content producers. So it was right before Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Mm-hmm. But we were in the position where we were more and more our own photographers, and the industry standard was moving from maybe one story a day or two stories a day with the ability to work on longer projects to 3, 4, 5 stories a day that were very short, you know, just the bare minimum. Churning out content. Mm-hmm. And that work is challenging and not as gratifying as some of the longer term work.
Right.
Important, but different. Mm-hmm. And then I got lucky in the sense that a job opened up in the Baldacci administration, and they saw something in me to give me a shot, and I ended up staying with the governor for his entire second 4-year term.
And it sounds like they gave you the opportunity, much like Bernstein Scher, to do some additional things, to really work on some other things that might be interesting to you as well.
Well, I think one of the things that happens when you work in communications for a governor or United States senator is a lot of things flow through you in a way that I think probably on the outside you wouldn't necessarily anticipate. But I did have the opportunity to move up to Deputy Chief of Staff, where I got to work on state budget issues, where I got to work on the Department of Health and Human Services, the main emergency management agency. But I think one of the proudest issues I worked on relates to one of the campaigns I worked on, and that is in 2009, when Governor Baldacci became the first governor in the country to sign without a court demand a law allowing same-sex couples to marry. Myself and Chief Counsel Pat Indy at the time were the leads inside the office on that policy area. And, you know, it was hard work, but an amazing experience. And then the crush of the people's veto that then repealed that in 2010, and then the ongoing work that ran through 2012. But, you know, that is, you know, the governor's signature becomes a footnote in that story. But to me, it was very personally relevant.
Did that did that kind of reversal, did that just fuel your own personal fire to see this through?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that the governor, we together as a team, we worked hard on the campaign against the repeal, and then continue to work on the issue from then on. You know, the governor's a practicing Catholic. You know, he listened to the debates at the time. Getting to the decision to sign was a bold move at that point. I think people forget how far ahead of the time that was when he did that. But once he got there, there was no stronger of an advocate. And working with him, that allowed me to be a very strong advocate as well.
Fast forward to now. And I'm wondering, on kind of a daily basis, how does your day go? And do people, you know, reach out to you? How does somebody get the ball rolling when they think, okay, I've heard about David Farmer. I know he's the guy I really want to, you know, pursue and see if he might be interested in heading up this campaign. How do they reach you?
Well, I tell you that no 2 days are the same because, a fair amount of the work that I do is in crisis support, crisis management, crisis communications. You know, that's not something that you plan for, that you know that's coming. So I have to have the ability to react when someone calls with a serious problem that needs attention. Sometimes that can be a data breach, and they're referred to me by the practice group here at Bernstein Shore who works on cybersecurity. And I can be brought in that way, or it can be a public relations or political crisis that has nothing to do with the firm at all. So when that phone rings and I pick it up, you know, it could be someone calling to check to see how my birthday went, or it could be somebody with an issue that's going to dominate my professional life for the next 6 weeks. You just never know.
Were you that kid in, you know, as you were growing up, were you that person who people sought out for good advice and your opinion?
I don't think so. I think I was pretty much of a dork. I'm not sure that people sought me. Maybe they sought me out for configuring their Dungeons and Dragons character, or, you know, to play Star Wars or something like that.
Well, that could be useful, right?
But I don't know that as a kid that I would have thought of myself that way. I was a kind of a late bloomer, and really came into my own during my college and graduate school experiences, where, you know, I started to learn more and see the world as a bigger place.
Do you think, having spent this much time here at Bernstein Shore, I mean, do you ever get the bug thinking, maybe I should go to law school?
No. So I have a lot of friends who ask that, or ask me about going to law school. And I say that, and what I tell them, the advice I give is that you should only go to law school if you want to be a lawyer. You know, the work I do, you know, I don't practice law. I do other things. I do lawyer adjacent activities, as it were. And I enjoy the work I do very much. But I have, you know, I don't, my skill, my passion is not the idea of being in a courtroom or to represent folks in complex legal matters, or to help people do big financial deals, you know, the types of things that the lawyers particularly here work on. You know, I like the work that I do that is supportive, and, but on a different track than that.
And kind of a complementary player. I mean, you really,
player.
So you're brought in, you did mention data breach, you know, and data privacy issues. What other kinds of issues are you brought in on? I'm just curious here at the firm.
Well, it could be anything. Large acquisitions, business acquisitions, often come with a public affairs or public communications component. Litigation support is another. I helped attorneys find and identify an expert witness on commodities for a recent case, because I had worked through my work at the state with some of the leading economists in Maine. And it helped them identify a short list of folks that had experience with commodities. So really, that type of support work can take many forms, looks like can look like a lot of different things.
So I'm just curious, give me kind of your impression of Bernstein Shure, just kind of from your office, and what is it that really makes Bernstein Shure a unique law firm?
Well, I would say I'll start off with the personal. It is a good place to work where folks take care of one another. There's a unspoken, no jerk rule. And it really is true. The folks here are collaborative and cooperative and look to lift folks up, look to lift you up. And they make a really good place, a good work environment. But beyond that personal thing, the firm has allowed me to pursue what I believe are good works. Work that I feel that's important to me, but also important to the world. And I think that if you look at Bernstein Shure, if you look at the history of the leadership, if you look at the people who have been here, I mentioned her before, Pat Peard, Kate Knox, mm-hmm. Joan Fortin. These folks have been at the forefront of progressive values and progressive thoughts. And for a big company, that's not always the case. And they've pushed the envelope, broken down walls, broken down barriers for different folks and different ideas. And, I think that is something that, the firm should be proud of and something I'm certainly proud of.
So what's next for you? What are you working on that you can share? What are some of the interesting projects that you can talk about?
Gosh, well, we are working right now with a company called Immax that is in the process of purchasing Emera Maine, which is the transmission and distribution utility it's not exactly lines up with the congressional districts, but the more rural northern part of the mm-hmm. state. And that is a large acquisition, complicated regulatory proceedings, and I really enjoy the client. I like the issue, and I like the prospect of doing something, in this case, a little bit outside of politics. Unfortunately, when it comes to the politics in the world right now, there's no shortage of work, particularly around LGBTQ issues. The attacks on our friends and neighbors are happening in Maine. They're happening in Massachusetts and in New Hampshire, and they're happening all over the country. And as long as those fights are happening, I hope to be involved in them.
I mean, this is personal. I mean, the kind of work you do, and it's so nice to see that you're able to take that personal, and it's also benefiting the company.
Well, like I said, I've been very lucky. If to think that you could build a successful business model around the idea of progressive advocacy. I'm not sure that would make a lot of sense, but we have been able to do it here. I mean, it requires some long days, sometimes long nights, but I think we have built collaborative relationships with groups and organizations that we can be proud to be affiliated with and that I hope are making a positive change in the world.
Just a last question for you here. How many phone calls would you say you field a day?
Gosh, I don't know. On a busy day,
yes.
It could be a dozen. But at that same time, there are days when it's really quiet. You just don't know. There's not a crisis every day. It may feel like it, but there's not a crisis every day. But when there is, when there's something hopping, you have a hard time getting to the refrigerator to get your lunch or run into the restroom some days. But it's a mix. It's a mix.
Yeah. So, David, people might want to reach out to you. What's the best way for them to reach you?
Well, there's a couple of ways. You can always reach me here at the office through the main line or direct 207-228-7275. If it's an emergency, if it's after hours, my cell is 207-557-5968. You may think it's weird to put your cell phone out in a podcast like that, but I'm on a lot of press releases. I've had this cell phone number since I worked in the governor's office. If you want it, you can find it. So I am not shy about sharing it.
Yeah. How about an email address?
dfarmer@bernsteinshure.com.
It has been such a joy having you on the SureCast, and I want to thank you so much for sharing and kind of taking us inside your world. It's a fascinating world here at Bernstein Sure.
Well, thank you. It's been a real pleasure. A lot of fun.
All the best to you, David.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to the SureCast, a Bernstein Sure podcast. We hope you have enjoyed the program. To find out more information about the topics discussed in this episode and more, please visit www.bernsteinshore.com/media. Thank you.